this is the introduction to multimedia. What we're going to do in this particular lesson is first we will introduce multimedia in terms of its definition, what components constitute multimedia, and increasingly multimedia is taking a communication flavor, and we're going to try to look at multimedia from a communications perspective. I'm also going to introduce you to the history and evolution of multimedia, and then refer to some applications that are commonly considered today to be multimedia applications. Multimedia, as the word suggests, it is a combination of two terms, multi and media. Multi meaning many, much, or multiple, and medium is an intervening substance or a means of communicating some content. What the definition by considering these two terms doesn't convey is the fact that the medium has to be digital in nature, that is, it has to be based on computer processing for it to be considered multimedia, at least as far as we are concerned in this course. To that extent, several people have given their own definitions of multimedia. In my opinion, one of the more acceptable definitions is by Franklin Coe, who defined multimedia from two points, viewpoints. One saying that multimedia concerns the representation of mixed modes of information, that is text, data, image, audio, and video, as digital signals. What is being captured in this definition is the fact that it is a representation of multiple modes of information. That is, it's not just one mode of information, but it is the combination of these modes of information, and more importantly, their representation as digital signals as opposed to analog signals, which is what movie experience in a cinema would be a multimedia experience, because you do have sound and video, but it is not digital in nature. The other aspect of multimedia which Franklin Coe also addresses in his definition is the fact that multimedia is more often than not today, being digital in nature, is communicated rather than just present on a single machine. In that sense, multimedia communications concerns the technology required to manipulate, transmit, and control audiovisual signals across a communication channel. And in order to appreciate this, we, as a part of the course, we will address communications as a separate and important aspect of multimedia. There's another definition by Guojun Liu, who defines multimedia system to be a system capable of handling at least one type of continuous media in digital form, as well as static media. In order to understand this definition, we would first have to define the terms continuous media and static media, which we will do in the next screen. In order to understand what continuous media is and what static media is, let's try to view the various classes of media that we come to consider as being part of multimedia. There are two broad classes. The first class is static media. It's static in the sense that there is no dependency on time. It's a time-independent discrete media. Examples being text, graphics, and images. The important thing to consider in these media is the fact that text has no time dependence associated with it. There is a before-after relationship that is spatial in nature, but it is not time-based, in the sense that a word would follow another word in space, in its positioning, and not necessarily in time. Information of these media consists exclusively of sequence of individual elements without a time component. Contrast this with dynamic media, which are time-dependent media, commonly called continuous media. Continuous media are media like sound and video, where there is where the information is expressed as not only by its individual value, but also by the time of its occurrence. In that sense, video and sound have a time aspect to them, because there is a time difference between the individual samples of sound or individual images of a video that has to be maintained in order for the content to make sense. Violating this dependence or this interval will destroy the desired effect that the media is supposed to convey. An important note in these two definitions is that the notion of time dependence has nothing to do with its representation, in the sense that both continuous media and discrete media, in their physical representation, convey absolutely no information as far as their time component. The time aspect is really a perception of the listener or the viewer, and not an effect of its internal representation. Let's take a look at multimedia systems from a communication perspective. The traditional view of multimedia system involved a local computer-based point of view, in the sense that the computer would probably have a CD-ROM or a hard disk where the media is stored, and you would all you really would consider is the representation of the media and presentation of the media on the device, in this case being the mic, the screen, display screen, and the speakers for audio. Increasingly, the real issues are no longer the local computer-based issues, but they're the communication issues. For example, it is pretty much agreed upon that the issues of presentation and representation of media on a CD-ROM do not pose challenges for from a technological or software point of view. However, conveying media, for example, using a network of computers where you're transmitting video and trying to present video from a remote location, is still a research issue, and it's very much an open problem because of technological innovations that are still happening, and also software methodologies or techniques that have been that are continuously being developed. So that's where the real issues are. In order to understand some of these issues, which we will address in the later part of the course, I'm going to introduce some terminology. And the most important term as far as the communications perspective is concerned is understanding the fact that all these media are comprised of individual elements, and being communicated, they have to be represented in terms of individual packets that are transmitted in a time-dependent fashion, and the sequence of individual packets that are transmitted in a time-dependent fashion are called a data stream. The packets can carry information of either continuous or discrete media. For example, if I have continuous media stream, a transmission of speech in telephony or transmission of live feed from a video camera, this would be a continuous media stream. A discrete media stream might be a retrieval of a document from a database, or for that matter, retrieval of a web page from a web server would constitute a discrete media stream. Continuous media is a special has special properties that have come to be understood as being specific to continuous media and do not manifest themselves elsewhere. The kind of characteristics we are talking about are the fact that the data streams can exhibit properties like asynchronousness, synchronousness, or isochronousness. Let's try to understand what these terms are. An asynchronous data stream is a data stream in which there is no delay guarantee. What we mean by that is you're trying to send a stream of individual packets, and we have no guarantee on how long it's going to take for a packet to arrive at its destination. So the system doesn't provide a guarantee saying that, or require a guarantee, doesn't provide a guarantee and doesn't require a guarantee on the delivery time. And so this is called asynchronous data stream. A synchronous data stream requires that there be an end-to-end a bound to the end-to-end delay. For example, if I were using audio, if I were communicating audio over a local area network, then that would constitute a synchronous data stream, meaning that the telephony or audio would be a constantly generated stream, and if you did not deliver the audio by a certain point, then its delivery cannot achieve that continuousness that audio demands. So that is an example of a synchronous data stream. You can also imagine transfer of video in an uncompressed form. In an uncompressed form, a video has fixed size frames that are transmitted successively, and they have to be delivered within a bounded delay so that the display of these video frames can be done at the rate of 16 frames per second or whatever is the minimum required in order to maintain continuity. One thing that synchronous data streams do not require or do not demand is the fact that there be a bound on not just a maximum bound or an upper bound on the end-to-end delay, but a lower bound also. What I mean by that is, let's take the example of audio transmission. If I were transmitting audio from a source A to a destination B, and if every audio sample was sent at a particular rate, that is the delay between the time of sending and the time of receiving is some X milliseconds. That is the desired interval. There is a possibility that I'd send a sample and the sample actually is received before the X milliseconds. That is, maybe the communication medium was found to be not very busy, and that's why your packet has reached its destination earlier than it's required. So what you would expect in that case is that the destination would buffer it, wait for the time for it to be played, for the audio sample to be played, and when that time comes, it would play it, which means that the destination has to have a buffer, and the buffer might have to be an arbitrarily large buffer because we don't have any guarantee on the minimum delay. So it's possible that during times of low congestion, you'd have your buffer filling up to be holding a lot of data. So isochronous data streams add this other dimension where we require that there not only be a bound on the maximum but end-to-end delay, but also a bound on the minimum end-to-end delay. These are required for many media streams like audio and video, and as we will see, this is popularly referred to as delay jitter or simply jitter, which implies that the interval between consecutive packets that constitute the media is bounded. Let's take a look at some other aspects of continuous media, particularly audio and video. Let's pay attention to the inter-packet interval. That is the interval between successive or consecutive packets. Depending upon the media, we can classify this to be strongly periodic, weakly periodic, or aperiodic. A strongly periodic inter-packet arrival implies that the time difference between consecutive packets is a constant. For example, if we were coding speech, for example, the telephone system is a good case of strongly periodic inter-packet intervals. Weakly periodic simply is a gray line between strong periodic and aperiodic. What weakly periodic inter-packet interval implies is that the time interval between packets can be described by a periodic function with finite period, but the time interval between consecutive packets is not a constant. Let's look at the figure and clarify what this means. As you notice in the figure, the time interval between the first and second packet is T1. The time interval between the second and third packet is T2. And the time interval between the third and the next packet is T3. However, the same pattern of T1, T2, and T3 repeats again from the fourth packet onwards. And we say that this is a weakly periodic because the inter-packet arrivals or inter-packet intervals are determined by a periodic function and so a pattern repeats after a few packets, as opposed to the inter-packet intervals being a constant. The other end of the spectrum is where we have absolutely no relationship between consecutive packets arrivals, and this is what we call as aperiodic media or aperiodic inter-packet interval. Examples being mouse events in groupware. Groupware indicates applications where a group of people are collaborating on either editing a file or maybe they're all collaborating to draw an image or working on a design. And the mouse events that each of them generate have no interval between them. I cannot say that every mouse click is followed by another mouse click that's of a constant duration. So that's what we mean by aperiodic intervals between packets. By the way, each mouse click would probably be conveyed to all the other participants in the groupware, and that's where the click is sent as a part of a packet. The event of the click is sent as a part of packet, and that's what we mean by aperiodic inter-packet intervals. As we continue to look at data stream characteristics, there are two other aspects that come to our mind. The first one is packet size variation. What we mean by this is, as we saw in inter-packet intervals, we're only talking about the interval between packets. We're somehow assuming that all of those packets are the same size, which might not be the case. If all packets are of an equal size, then we call it to be a strongly regular. That is, for example, if I were getting a live feed from a camera, every so often, let's say if it's a 30 frames per second camera, then every 1/30th of a second, I would get a frame, and the frame is always going to be of the same size. It's irrespective of whether you're shooting a fast car chase or whether you are shooting a beautiful scenery that is pretty much static. In this scenario, what we notice is that every packet is of a constant size, and other examples are audio CDs. In an audio CD, there's pretty much no compression involved, and every audio sample is of the same size. Every audio sample captures a fixed duration of the audio. Let's contrast this with weakly regular overtime. What we mean by weekly regular overtime is analogous to the weekly periodic we saw before. The packet size doesn't stay a constant, but it fluctuates, and then there's a pattern to the fluctuation. For example, MPEG uses a mechanism of coding its frames where we see an iframe, which is independently coded frame, which is kind of a reference frame, and then it's followed by what we call as B frames and P frames. B and P frames are what we call as differentially coded frames. What happens in these cases is an iframe is, being a reference frame, is a large frame. It has a lot of data in it. The next frame, which is a preframe, might not be, it's only the difference from the previous frame, meaning that it's going to be a smaller frame. And likewise, a B frame takes a difference looking back and forward. It's called a bidirectional frame, and it's going to be even smaller. So the interesting thing is that you have I frames, B frames, and P frames, and you have a certain number of these frames that repeat so every so often. For example, the classic definition of MPEG or classic specification of MPEG sees that the ratio of I, B, and P frames is in the ratio 10:1:2. What that simply means is you'd have an I frame followed by some number of B frames and some number of P frames, and then an I frame would start again. And this is a weekly regular variation of the packet size over time. The last possibility is an irregular packet size variation. As you imagine, this is a case where there is absolutely no relationship between the size of one packet and the succeeding packet. These might be cases where you have compressed media and the compression is by differentially coding. To give you an example of a differentially coded media, imagine a media where for example, audio, which is coded by differential pulse code modulation. As we will see in the later part of the course, a differential pulse code modulation involves taking a sample, and the next sample would be a difference from the previous sample. You would only record the difference between the value and the previous sample and send the difference. The idea is that if you were to send every sample in its native value, then all of these would take up a lot of space. So what we do is, let's say the samples are going like 10, 12, maybe 9 and 11 and so on. So you have 10, 12, 9, and 11. If I were to send these numbers by themselves, then that would take up some amount of space. Now, instead of sending them as 10, 12, 9, and 11, I could have been sending them as the first one as 10. And then instead of sending 12, I would send 2, indicating that it's the difference between this sample and the previous sample is 2. So I would take 2 and send 2. And then the next one I would send as a difference between the previous sample, which is 12, and 9, which is 3. And then I would send the next sample, which is 11, as instead of sending it as 11, I would send it as 11-9, which is again 2. The advantage that we have here is smaller numbers take less space, and so we would be able to get compression. And in this particular case, we cannot pinpoint any pattern to the sizes of the various samples. The various samples here being the values which we are trying to send. The other aspect of data streams is the contiguity of packets. What we mean by that is contiguity characterizes the continuousness of packets, whether there is any connection between consecutive packets. To understand what this means, let's take the two possibilities. One is a connected stream and the other is an unconnected stream. If you're trying to send packets and that all packets are transmitted successively without a gap result thing between them, then we say that there's 100% utilization. To understand this, take an example of ISDN, which has what we call as a B channel that it allows for transmission. A B channel is a 64 kilobits per second channel. Now, if I'm trying to send audio data on this, what you will notice is that audio data is never requires more than 64 kilobits per second. When you use a B channel in ISDN for transmitting audio data, what we see is 100% utilization. What we mean by that is the audio data is always ready, and it can use the entire bandwidth of 64 kilobits per second, which means that anytime the media is the transmission medium is free, we have a packet ready to be sent. So there is never a gap between packets. So every time the medium is found free, we put a packet on it, and so the packets go back to back with absolutely no gap between them. Let's contrast this with unconnected streams. Let's take for an instance an example of sending a media, and the rate at which you generate the media is slower than the rate at which the transmission medium can transmit the media. To take an example, let's say we have a JPEG compressed media image which needs a transmission rate of 1.2 megabits per second. That's an average transmission rate required. Let's say we're trying to transmit this JPEG image over an FDDI network. Obviously, the entire JPEG image might not be able to pack it in a single packet, so we would have individual packets that make up the image. Now, if I were transmitting this on an FDDI network, which has a capacity of 100 megabits per second, what we would notice is that you're generating these packets at a slower rate than the medium can handle. So you're going to send a packet, and the medium is free for a long enough time before you can send the next packet. So in this particular case, we would have an unconnected stream because there is no back-to-back sending of data. As a matter of fact, from the transmission medium's point of view, you could have one packet from this particular stream, and then some other stream could insert a packet in between because it finds the medium to be idle. Let's try to put all of these concepts of data stream characteristics into perspective by taking an example. Let's say you have an NTSC video signal that's being captured by a video camera, and it's digitized in a computer. Yet at this point, let's say we don't have any compression. That is, there's no compression being done. The created data stream is strongly periodic, strongly regular, and connected. How do we say this? We say this because it's strongly periodic because the video camera is going to give you a constant 60 frames per second or 50 frames per second, and that's a strongly periodic interval between packets. The second thing is it's strongly regular. It's strongly regular simply because we said that there's no compression, which means that every packet is going to be of the same size. If we had compression, then every packet might not be of the same size. Lastly, it is connected. It's connected because you have a dedicated line from the video camera to the computer, and you are able to send packets back to back without any gaps in between because the computer is able to is barely able to keep up with the video signal, and that's why the medium is connected. Obviously, there are no gaps among the packets. Let's take another perspective to understand another way of looking at the same media. If, let's say, during the digitizing process, we use a compression method as opposed to sending it a live feed from the camera as an NTSC signal. If by using this compression, the resulting data stream when you take it over a long period of time, it's going to be weekly periodic, it's going to be weekly regular, and as we will see, through transmission over a 16 megabits per second token ring, it's going to appear unconnected. It's weekly periodic over a long period of time because of the compression that we're using. It's weekly regular because we are using, let's say, some sort of a mechanism like MPEG where we have I frames, B frames, and P frames. And when you transmit a media like this, a 60 frames per second video over a 16 megabits per second token ring, what we will notice is that the token ring is capable of handling higher data rates than the transmission rate of your media. And to make matters more interesting, the token ring will never allow you to send data continuously, because you would send it for your synchronous allocation and then you would wait for your chance again to send some more data so that other nodes within the ring get a chance to send their own data stream. So in that sense, it would be unconnected. Let's look at the various components and how they contribute to make up various wavelengths that constitute visible light. We're asking the question, what is the composition of the various wavelengths in terms of the three components, red, blue, and green? As the figure shows, we notice that different wavelengths, for example, a wavelength of 400 nanometers is almost all blue light. And there is even that, the blue content is very, very minimal. Let's move further through the spectrum, and we notice that value of wavelength around 520 or 550 is going to have a combination of both green, red, and some blue, and that's what comprises that particular wavelength. And I want to make a note that this figure that you see is different from the human perception or sensitivity of light. What we mean by that is this is simply telling you if you have a light of frequency 500 nanometers, all it's answering is what does this contain? How much blue does it have? How much green does it have? And how much red does it have? Whereas the sensitivity is telling us, as humans perceive, how much of that red or how much of that green or how much of that blue are we capable of perceiving as humans? Let's take a look at the color models that are used in images. We've looked at the terms red, green, and blue, or in other words, the components of light that have the colors red, green, and blue. Now, it turns out that there are two popular models that are used. One is an RGB model, which is what we call as an additive model, and the CMY model, which is a subtractive model. The CMY model stands for cyan, magenta, and yellow, and obviously the RGB model is red, green, and blue. The RGB model is used in cathode ray tube displays or monitors, and the idea here is that the monitor has phosphors which have this property of being when they impinged with a certain frequency or voltage of light, they absorb certain light and then they glow with a certain color for a small amount of time. So displaying an image or displaying any content on a monitor involves projecting the right amount of light or the right voltage on these phosphors in order to make them display a particular color. In that sense, a color image is just a two-dimensional array of the RGB values that need to represent that particular phosphor that is being displayed. Let's contrast this with the CMY model, which is a subtractive model. The CMY model uses complementary colors, which are cyan, magenta, and yellow, which are complementary to red, green, and blue. As you see in the figure, the opposite of cyan on the cube is red, and the opposite of magenta is green, and the opposite of blue is yellow. The CMY model is used primarily on printing devices where we have color pigments on the paper that tend to absorb certain colors when we spray ink on them. And that's the idea that is used. That is, when we spray cyan ink on some of these pigments, cyan ink, no red light is reflected from cyan ink. That is, what we have as a result is that when light falls on this on the printed paper and it we perceive it, one of the things that happens is when red light the light that you have has the entire visible spectrum in it, and when white light falls on this image which is on the paper, it the particular pigment on a one of the spots is going to absorb part of it and it's going to reflect rest of the light. So when we would like it to absorb a certain color, we simply spray the complementary color there. So in order for it to absorb red light, we would use cyan ink in the spot, and so it would absorb red light, but it would reflect everything else, and that's what gives you the color on that particular location on the paper. Just to get an idea about the application scope of multimedia, let's look at some sample applications. These by no means are an exhaustive list, because we are developing new applications every day and new classes of applications every day, and this list is probably going to grow as we go on. Let's first look at the list as we see it today. Hypermedia courseware. This is one of the increasing markets today, and interestingly, this very course that you're taking is a perfect example of hypermedia courseware, because you're receiving this material as links, as flash content, as web interfaces to bulletin boards and things like that. So that constitutes a hypermedia courseware. Video conferencing. That's a classic example of multimedia. Unfortunately, it is not a total reality today, because there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. There is promise on the way with things like NetMeeting and CUCME and WIC and VAT, which are used on the MBone. The next area is video on demand. The idea of video on demand is to take cable TV, if you will, to the next level, where one can currently receive pay-per-view channels. And what this is doing is it's taking this one step further, where you can get video on demand, and if there are multiple people requesting the same video, then a single stream is sent across and it's split at the appropriate point to be able to direct it to the individual requesters. Of course, interactive TV with web TV is a classic example. Groupware is an increasingly appealing application of multimedia. Groupware involves collaborative environments where a group of people could be collaborating on a design or editing a file or constructing some image or constructing a putting together a car or anything of that kind. Home shopping, obviously, and perhaps the biggest dominating fraction or segment of multimedia applications today is games. If you look at the industry and partition it in terms of revenue, games would probably be the leading multimedia application today. Virtual reality is still an academic endeavor. However, some of the lessons that people have learned in virtual reality have slowly come into commercial and user applications. Lastly, digital video editing and production systems. Most of you probably know that today most of the animation pictures we see involve digital video editing and production systems. In fact, even non-animation movies where there are a lot of special effects tend to involve digital video editing and production. One of the benefits of this is that you don't have to be a big Hollywood producer or director to be able to afford to make a movie anymore. You can buy a $5,000 machine with digital video editing and production software and hardware, and any regular Joe should be able to develop a movie. Perhaps this is one of the reasons why Steve Jobs recently announced that the next killer application as far as computers are concerned is going to be movie making by individuals, and that's where this particular application fits in.